You know, it has been quite a stressful 4 weeks. Everything got bunched up together again with me having to delay my trip to Ghana in January because of the flu. And then I ended up going to Ghana, and as soon as I got back, I had to go down and do the television programs. And as soon as I got back from that, go back for editorial meetings. So it has been quite a stressful 4 weeks. In fact, one night last week, I woke up in the middle of the night wanting to go to the bathroom. And I was actually trying to open the wall so that I could go to the bathroom. I got out of bed and I was trying to open the wall. I thought it was a door because the door was there, you know, in the last place I stayed at. And I thought that was where it was. So I'm trying to open it. And what I had done was the wall, you know, ends there and then there's a window. And I was trying to open the wall where the window was behind my hand, and I'm trying to open it. And, you know, I'm struggling with this, and, of course, I really want to get out of the room, and I'm trying to open this, and it wouldn't open. And then Diane turns on the light and says, "What are you doing?" And I'm surprised she didn't move out that day, to be honest. I mean, obviously I was losing my mind. She has a way of making me realize I've been away too much, because I called her from the editorial meetings on Wednesday, and I said, "Hi, sweetie," and I started talking, and then she said, "Excuse me, who am I talking to?" So I said, "All right, fine, I'm coming home," and she is going with us on this trip, so we'll have time to get reacquainted, which is nice. But, you know, I mean, it's just such a contrast. When I grew up, there was so little stress, and now there's so much stress. You know, when I was in England, I saw a movie on TV that was made around the time that I was born. Yes, it did have sound, and it was in color. It was also in color. The color was fading quite a bit, I got to tell you that, but it was still in color. But it brought back so many memories, and the sense that it conjured up for me more than anything else was of a far less stressful time. And it led me to think of how we got from there to here. Planes, trains, and automobiles have all added stress to our lives. Until I was 14, we had no phone. Then it was just the one phone in the hallway. Today we have a home phone, plus cell phones, plus texting, plus there's email. All of these things, which are never-ending distractions, and they all place demands on your time. And even though, in theory, they're all labor-saving devices, in actual fact, they've all added to the workload and the stress that we all feel. I'm sure you would agree with that. You know, then, of course, you know, back when I was growing up, we had two TV channels. In fact, we never even had a TV till I was 9. And then we had two channels, and now what? It's over 200 channels for the average person. And, you know, the only difference I see is when we had two channels, there was far more that was worth watching than we've got with 200 channels. So you probably feel the same way with that too. But, you know, I think this is one reason why I really enjoy trips going back to Ghana. I have no desire to live in Ghana anymore. We lived there for 7 years. I don't want to go back there. But it's so much more relaxing. It's a great de-stressor, partly because there are very few distractions. It's a much more simple existence. And, you know, I quite admire people who live in that existence because it is so much more simple. And it's so much easier to get their lives in order. I meet many people from the United States in Ghana who have moved there, usually to retire. But sometimes they go there to do some form of charitable work, alleviating poverty, or some form of preaching or teaching. But all will tell you how much more relaxed they feel. I've had people tell me that their high blood pressure has gone away since they moved there. I've had people tell me that the problems they had with their back, I mean, one guy was telling me that when he lived here, he went to the chiropractor 3 times a week. Since he moved there, he hasn't had to go once in 3 years. And, you know, all of that changes as a result of just getting that stress out of your life. It's certainly far less stressful. And I notice the difference every time I come home back to Michigan. I feel that when I come through customs and baggage claim, I immediately get on a treadmill that's out of control, possessed by a demon that wants to kill us all from stress. That's how it feels sometimes. It's difficult to explain, but I thought of it a few days ago when I heard a lecture at the editorial meetings that quoted from 2 Timothy chapter 3. And it was interesting because the interpretation of this verse in the New King James translation of the Bible, in the marginal note, is actually quite different and puts a different perspective on the passage. In 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, "Know this, that in the last days perilous times will come." But if you have the right New King James, and I don't, because mine's a study Bible, so it's not in my Bible, which is why I was not aware of this before, but it was brought out in the lecture from Mr. Kylo a few days ago at the editorial meetings. In his margin, the alternative translation of the passage is times of stress. Times of stress. Instead of perilous times. Now, I suppose both are okay. You know, the New Testament was written in Greek. And the problem is sometimes it's very difficult to get an exact translation of some words from Greek into English because often there is no exactly a parallel word that can be used. So, you know, either would be an accurate translation. But anyway, certainly times of stress describes the age in which we live, the Western world in which we live. I mentioned to you some time ago that when Diane and I went down to the Laureate Institute in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is the country's leading institute for people with eating disorders. And, you know, we went to visit somebody, by the way, not for our own selves. But when we went there for that, we were told in a lecture that that addictions are a Western problem. And that, that all addictions have one thing in common, basically, and that is that people's lives are out of control. So, you know, addictions have a root commonality of stress. And some people react to that with addictions, with eating disorders. Some react in other ways. But this is the country's leading institute on eating disorders, and this is the conclusion they had come to in helping people over the years with that particular problem. So we certainly live in a time of great stress, and particularly in the Western world. And when you go to a place like Ghana, you just realize that stress is not there. They don't have the same problems that we have. The Expositor's Bible Commentary makes this comment about this particular passage of 2 Timothy chapter 3. It says, in these three verses, verses 2 through 4, we find a list of no fewer than 18 vices that will characterize people in the last days. These conditions have always existed in some measure, but they become more marked in recent decades. And I think that's true. And I'll leave you to read the passage. But I think that's a very valid comment. We certainly are living in very stressful times. We heard Ron talking about forgiveness, and Ron mentioned, reminded us all of how he lost his job a few weeks ago and how difficult it's been for him. And, of course, many other people are going through similar problems, similar challenges. And I was explaining to Graham and Lynn on the way here that really we've got a situation now, certainly here in Michigan, and again, throughout the Western world, really, where nobody can absolutely be guaranteed that they will keep their job until next month, and especially at the same pay. I mean, everybody is faced with, the situation of wondering what's going to happen. Somebody sent me an article yesterday from a highly respectable Canadian newspaper, the National Post, the Financial Post, and the title of the article was, "Is This the End of America?" And the article was on all about our economic problems and how we're trying to resolve those economic problems and just, you know, asking, is something really, really big happening at this time we're not fully aware of? Now, they actually come to the conclusion that, no, they think we will come out of it. I think personally, for what it's worth, that America's going through what England went through after World War II. The end of World War II, England and Britain at that time, you know, had this big empire. It was a quarter of the world's people. And at the end of World War II, Britain was broke. It had fought wars all over the world during World War II, and it was broke and could not cope anymore financially. And I think we're in that situation right now. And, you know, there's a lot of things being done right now that would suggest that we're in that same situation in the United States. Even the president reaching out yesterday to Iran. And the fact that when Hillary Clinton went to China, she said nothing about human rights. You know, there's a realization that we can't do everything we want to do anymore, and we're coming down in terms of our stature in the world. So, you know, these articles, though, just add to the sense of stress that I think we all feel. And, of course, people are worried at this particular time about, you know, what is happening. Just look at verse 2 of this particular passage in 2 Timothy chapter 3. You know, even the Apostle Paul showed there was a connection between these times of stress and money, because money is a major factor. And I'm not going to be talking about the financial crisis, really. We're talking about stress, and, you know, this just leads into that. But it says, men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money. If you look at 1 Timothy chapter 6, the Apostle Paul said in verse 10 that the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So many things have gone wrong. You know, when people just pursue money, and that is the first thing in their lives, when they put money before God, then of course a lot of things often will go wrong. Maybe not immediately. They might be successful for a long time. But eventually, things will go wrong. And here's the Apostle Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 3 saying, at this time of stress, at the end time, men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money. You know, we brought this crisis upon ourselves through greed. Rather than applying the economic laws of God, we devised a system that we thought would last forever, but it didn't. Interestingly, just studying this passage, my New King James Study Bible sums this period of time up as part of the social and political corruption affecting the nation. That's the title at the back with the explanation of this passage. Social and political corruption, where all of society and all the norms, and especially, you know, the family system that was the bedrock of this society for so long, is all falling apart. And hence the title, Social and Political Corruption. And that's affecting the nation. It brought down ancient Israel and, of course, has contributed to bringing us down as well. It's all part of an economic system that's aptly described as Babylon equals confusion. Babylon, that's what Babylon means, confusion. Whereas God intended people to work on the land for 6 days a week and rest on the Sabbath, we have created a 24/7 economic system that never lets us relax. So it's no wonder that Christianity Today, a couple of months ago, wrote that the number one problem in America is alienation from God. That is the number one problem in America. And I believe that is the case. You know, I had to think about it myself, and I thought, well, is that really the biggest single problem? But I think it is, alienation from God. People do not have time for God, and so consequently, there's an emptiness in most people's lives. And again, a lot of people, as a result of that emptiness, they turn to drugs or alcohol or sex or the internet or whatever, because their lives are empty, and it comes back to that emptiness that people feel as a result from their alienation from God. In our young guy speech group last week, the sermonette class that I have once a month, we had a discussion on this very topic. And I've got to say I was really proud of the guys who were there because it was clear that every single one in the room was trying to put God first in their lives. But in our conversation, and all these guys are 18 to 30 years of age, in our conversation, you know, people were talking quite openly about how difficult it is to do that. And we all agreed it's more difficult for those who are married with children, because that adds even greater stress to our lives. If you have young children, it's often very difficult to get things done. And certainly it can be difficult to spend that time with God each day in prayer and Bible study. But everybody did agree that, you know, this should be our priority. And, you know, maybe we'll pursue that again when we meet again next month and discuss it some more. Because somehow, you know, we have to try to resolve this. Jesus Christ said in Matthew chapter 6, in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33, he said, "Seek first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you." So all the things that we constantly worry about, what he's saying is he will take care of those things if we seek him first. And, you know, it's just not easy to do that, because naturally as human beings, you know, we tend to think that, you know, we tend to worry about where everything is going to come from. In fact, I didn't have this in my notes, but the next verse is a favorite verse in Ghana. And I'm always having to tell the Ghanaians that, you know, this is not the full picture here. Because the next verse says, "Therefore do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble." So Ghanaians don't worry. They just do not worry. They don't have any food, but they don't worry. They know that, they say, "God will provide." That's the favorite expression. "God will provide." But then they don't do anything to try to help themselves. So when I get with them, I have to say, "Look, you know, you also have a responsibility. You need to be out there growing your own food. You need to be out there providing for your families. You need to be working." But, you know, they don't quite have that ethic. They don't have that understanding in their own culture. But we are at the other end of the spectrum here. We worry so much about all the physical things, we don't have time for the spiritual things. They have plenty of time for the spiritual things. If it wasn't for me being there, the service would go on until sunset, because they just love to be in church. And it starts at 10 in the morning, and they'd be quite happy to have an 8-hour service. But I don't want an 8-hour service. It's so hot and so humid that, you know, I want to get back to my air-conditioned hotel room as soon as possible, not to mention a place with bathroom facilities. But, you know, so it's a different mentality totally. But there's a balance here. There is a balance. And, you know, both ends of the spectrum need to learn the balance. They need to learn that they need to make effort to take care of their own families. We need to learn to put God first. Because in our society, the demands on us physically are so great that we can often neglect our relationship with God. And it's extremely important for us to sort that out. Look at Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22. I think a lot of people do come to understand this more as they get older, and I think many people make a lot of mistakes, you know, through their lives, and eventually come to understand this and wish that they had known it 40 years ago. I was talking with some friends recently about the same age. Somebody made the comment they wish they were 18 again, going back 40 years. I was 18 40 years ago. And, you know, I made the comment. I said, "Well, yeah, it'd be nice to be 18 again, but only if I knew what I know now. If I understood at 18 what I know now, if only I understood at 18 what I know now." In fact, you know, yesterday we were talking to our youngest daughter, who has just started a good job now that she's got a qualification. And, you know, she got a first paycheck yesterday, and we were talking about it. And I said, "You know, one of my regrets is this. We've moved around so much, and every time we kind of start again." And I said, "You know, really, if from the time I was 18, I had consistently throughout the years saved 10% of my income, then we would have nothing to worry about now." So I said, "That's my advice to you. Save 10% of your income. Don't touch it. Just let it accumulate." And I would add now, after 40 years, in fact, after the last 18 months, I would add now, don't invest it because, you know, you'll lose it all. So just save it. You know, a lot of people are stuffing money under the mattress now. You know, the police are getting concerned because when homes get broken into now, one of the first places the thieves go to is the bed, and they turn over the mattress to see if there's any money under there. So don't leave it in the mattress. You know, put it somewhere, you know, I don't know what you can do. There's no really safe way of handling anything, really. But, I was just making the point. Just save that money and, then you won't have anything to worry about when you get to our age. Of course, nothing is absolutely guaranteed. But anyway, Matthew chapter 22, here's something else that, you learn more and more as you get older, and certainly through this financial upheaval and other things, I think a lot of people are having to learn this. And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question. I went through this last week with the young adults as well. So one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? Which is the most important commandment?" Christ said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." These two commandments sum up the Ten Commandments. Putting God first, that's the first four commandments out of the ten. And then, love toward neighbor is the other six of the Ten Commandments. But Christ was simplifying it here and showing that there are these two great commandments. And I think a lot of people are learning just how important these are. I found it interesting sometimes, watching the news and seeing various things that are happening. I find it interesting how people react to different things. Whether it is people losing their homes now, the number of people who are losing their homes. I read in Detroit it's been 100,000 have been evicted from their homes, just in Detroit. 100,000 families, I think, have lost their homes. But in the country as a whole, it's something like 3 million or something. And occasionally, they'll interview somebody on TV and they're asking them. And, some people react very badly. Some people, they just fall apart. They're crying. They're, my whole life has been this house. Nothing is more important to me. This house means everything to me. We bought it 25 years ago. I've lived here 25 years. And they're falling apart. And it brings back memories because my grandfather was like that. He lost his house, not through foreclosure, but the city wanted to tear down the area that he lived in, which was built like in the 1800s sometime. They wanted to tear it down because they said it was a slum, and they wanted to put up a new slum, because that's what they did. They put up a new slum. But anyway, he had to leave. He and my grandmother had to leave and move into another place. 3 weeks to the day before, they had to leave the house, he got ill and died. And the whole family said the reason is because he just could not face the fact that he was leaving the house that they had lived in ever since they got married 45 years earlier, approximately. And, that is not the way that I would react. I think when you understand the bigger picture and when you live according to what Jesus Christ taught us, then you're not going to feel that way about physical things. I saw the same thing in the fires in Australia, which we saw on television a few weeks ago. Some people, when their house had gone, they just fell apart. And they would say things like, "Well, what is there left to live for?" Things like that. And yet you see on the other side, you get people who come out of things like the fires in Australia or California or the economic problems. Other people take the view, I've still got my life. I've still got those I love. That's all that matters. And occasionally, really, but you do hear it occasionally. I've heard it on more than one occasion. You'll have somebody say, "What I've learned through all of this is there's only two things that really matter. One is my relationship with God, and the other is my relationship with the people I love." Now, I've never heard anybody actually refer to the two great commandments. But when people come to understand that and they say it in those words, they are, of course, inadvertently repeating what Jesus Christ said. That's all that is important. So their faith got them through the crisis and the love that they have for each other. And, those are, of course, the two most important things. Yesterday, I was leaving the house. I had to see somebody at 11 o'clock, and just as I was leaving the house, Karen, our daughter-in-law, turned up, And the two girls got out of the vehicle. They ran right across the lawn. Grandpa, Grandpa, and they just threw their arms around me, and they were talking nonstop about all the different things that they've been doing since I saw them last time. And, you know, that is just such a beautiful moment. And I felt terrible that I was leaving to go somewhere, but, you know, I was on my way out. And I felt bad that that was the only time I had for them. If I'd known they were coming, I would have tried to change things around a bit and spend more time with them. But, you know, it's such a delight when that kind of thing happens. And you realize this is what it's all about. This is what is important. And if we lose the house, or any of you lose your house, or any of you lose your job or whatever, you know, the most important things are summed up in the two great commandments. And, you know, we need to keep that in mind and keep our focus and not worry unduly about these other things. Having said that, of course, you want to do everything that you can to try to, you know, keep your house and keep your job and so on. But, you know, realize they're just things, and we can't take those things with us. Look at Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. I went through this passage a while ago when I gave a sermon on the financial crisis and showing God's economic system and how God's economic system would have avoided this crisis that we're going through now. It says in verse 19, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So again, it's just a reminder, those physical things are really, we can lose them all. That's what Christ was saying. Now, this was before we had the economic system that we've got today, or rather the economic system we had until about 6 months ago. You know, but I think the principle applies, because, you know, people have lost everything. I heard a guy say something the other day which made me laugh, but it was rather unkind. He said, "This downturn is worse than a divorce. I've lost half my wealth and I've still got my wife," he said. So I don't know what her reaction was when he got home, but I'm sure she wasn't very nice. But the point is, a lot of people have lost half their wealth. But, you know, what he should have said is, "I've lost half my wealth. It doesn't matter because I've still got my wife." That's what he should have said. And that's how we should all feel. And not just our wife. We've got our kids and our grandkids. We've got the people that we love. And we've still got our congregation, you know. So let's not worry if we lose a lot of things, because those things are really not important. And I think this is what the whole thing is teaching us at this particular time. It's often been said that you can't take it with you. But what you can take with you is your relationship with God and your relationship with other people who, like you, have the potential of being spirit beings in God's family forever and ever. That's our potential. And we can take that with us. And you know, after the resurrection, 1,000 years from now, it won't really matter looking back how much you might have lost in the crash of 2008, 2009, and however long it may last. So in this very busy world we live in, how can you live the two great commandments? The battle really is in the mind. Once you've established that these are your two priorities, your relationship with God and your relationship with others, you cut out distractions that get in the way. You have to simplify your life and keep simplifying your life until life works, until you can live by the two great commandments. You just have to keep cutting things out until you get to that point. More than once, I've read the same advice in this financial climate: make every penny count. Don't spend money that you don't have to spend. The same principle can be applied to time. Don't take on too much. Don't waste time. Make sure that the two great commandments are your focus. They are the foundation upon which your life is built, because they are the way to happiness. Look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 15. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil or stressful. And we do live in a very stressful time, but it's also a very evil time in many ways too, because, you know, some of the things you hear about it. I mean, again, you know, I think back to my childhood. You know, I could leave the house at 8 or 9 in the morning, go out and play with my friends. We could go all over town. We didn't have a cell phone. We didn't have to call home. My parents didn't worry about us at all. You just go home in the evening for something to eat. And you were gone all day. And my mother never worried at all. Now, I mean, you can't do that at all. Your children are out of your sight for 5 minutes. And, you know, people are worried sick. And you get these Amber Alerts on TV for children that are missing. I mean, it's awful. It is a very difficult time in which to live, really. And not just that, but, you know, other things as well. And so we are living in a difficult time. But here's a reminder from the Apostle Paul to redeem the time, to make the time count. But it's interesting what verse 17 says. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And God's will is that we live according to the two great commandments. Love toward God and love toward neighbor, which begins with family but extends beyond family as well. I think we could add a third to that, in a sense. It's not as important because Christ clearly showed us what the two great commandments are. But I think this was not something that was a paramount concern in his time when people lived much more active lives. You know, they walked everywhere, for example. They didn't have public transport back in Roman times, back in Judea. But in 1 Corinthians 6, the Apostle Paul, in verse 20, refers to the importance of taking care of your health. Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit that is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. So after the two great commandments, I would think the next most important thing is to take care of your health. Because if you don't, you know, then you're not going to be able to live according to the two great commandments. And it's going to affect other people in your family. It's going to shorten your life. And it's going to have a very negative effect on you. So take care of your health. Stress kills. It's easy to neglect our own health. And like I said, in Christ's time, I don't think that was a major issue. But the two great commandments still come first. The two great commandments line the road to happiness. Look at Matthew chapter 6 again. Matthew chapter 6. So the two great commandments line the road to happiness. Matthew 6, beginning in verse 7. Here is Christ's example of a prayer. It was not meant to be repeated, which it was when I was growing up. We had to repeat it every day in school. And when you pray, verse 7, do not use vain repetitions as the heathen do. So here quite clearly, don't repeat something which becomes meaningless when you repeat it. It's a vain repetition. For they think that they will be heard for their many words. Therefore, do not be like them, for your Father knows the things you have need of before you ask him. In this manner, therefore, pray. Then he gives us the example of the Lord's Prayer. But included in this is a point I want to show you. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come. So that focus again on the kingdom. Remember, seek first the kingdom of God, Matthew 6, verse 33. And here he's saying, your kingdom come. This is something we should pray for every day. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. But then give us this day our daily bread. So clearly this was a daily prayer. We know Christ set us the example of daily prayer. We know Daniel prayed 3 times a day. We know others that followed God prayed regularly. Paul said, pray without ceasing. And here it says, give us this day our daily bread. So, you know, they had to pray every day. He was teaching them that. Pray every day that God will take care of you physically so that you won't have to worry about where the next meal is coming from or, you know, whether you're going to have a roof over your head. Pray each day for these things. So prayer is something that we should certainly be doing every day. Then in Acts chapter 17, we see also the example of the Bereans, who set as an example of studying the Bible every day. And it's these two things that help us to build a relationship with God and to fulfill the first of the two great commandments. Acts 17, verses 10 through 12. The brethren immediately sent Paul and Silas away by night to Berea after they had been the subject of an attack. When they arrived, they went into the synagogue of the Jews. These were more fair-minded than those in Thessalonica, in that they received the word with all readiness, and they searched the scriptures daily to find out whether those things were so. So they studied the Bible daily. And it says in verse 12, there's a connection here with verse 12, therefore, because they studied the Bible daily, therefore, many of them believed, and also not a few of the Greeks, prominent women as well as men. So both the Jews and the Gentiles, the Greeks, because they studied the Bible daily, they realized the truth of God. And so, you know, they were converted, they changed, they were baptized, they became members of the fledgling church at that particular time. And it's all because they learned to put God first in their lives through prayer and Bible study. And we need to follow these examples. Without those two, you know, we're not going to develop that close relationship with God, which means that we're living according to the two great commandments. Now maybe you need to get up 30 minutes earlier each day, or maybe use your lunch hour, or spend some time with God before bed. Pick a time and get into a routine. If you don't, it's too easy to neglect your relationship with God as all the other demands crowd in on you, and they do from the moment you get up. You know, I got up rather late this morning, got up just before 8 o'clock, and the phone started ringing at 8:10. And, you know, if you don't get control, it can go on like that for the rest of the day. One phone call after another, or an email, or, you know, something else, or the grandkids come over unexpectedly, and when that happens, you're not going to get anything done. You know, I mean that again, in a nice way, because it is a delight when they come over. But, you know, you've really got to pick a time when you can devote some personal time to that relationship with God, and it's very important. And we need to also make sure, of course, that we do have time for when the grandchildren come over, or for our children, and for our spouse, and, you know, those that really matter most to us. I felt bad all week in sympathy with the actress Vanessa Redgrave, who lost her daughter this week, Natasha Richardson, in a freak skiing accident. Growing up in England, the Redgraves were a prominent family. Her father, Sir Michael Redgrave, was a great actor. Her mom was a great actress. Vanessa was a great actress, and CNN described her as arguably the greatest actress in the world. Arguably. Others would disagree. But, she's always been rather prominent, partly because Vanessa Redgrave, Natasha's mother, had some very radical political views. She was the leader of what was called the Socialist Workers' Party, which makes the communists look respectable. A very extreme political party. And, you know, my dad was involved with radical politics when I was growing up. And so, you know, I was always kind of interested in this. I never agreed with her views by any means. But I read her autobiography a few years ago, and it was quite interesting. But, you know, one thing that struck me was that here is somebody who has never had God in her life. Never. You know, as a communist, a Trotskyite, the Socialist Workers' Party were followers of Leon Trotsky. He was kicked out of the Communist Party in Russia, murdered by Stalin's henchmen in Mexico. And Trotsky was very radical. He led the Red Army in the Russian Revolution. And, you know, they murdered millions of people. And so, she seems like such a nice lady in her movies. But, you know, she was ruthless when it came to politics. And, you know, God was not in her life. And I wondered, you know, how she would cope with the loss of her daughter this week. somebody with no religious beliefs whatsoever. And then she lost her daughter, who she was obviously very close to, in a freak accident. But it reminded me of Sir Richard Attenborough, who some of you might have seen some of his programs on television. He does a lot of these documentaries on wildlife and everything. And he did a big series that I think was on the Discovery Channel, all about evolution. And, you know, in that series that he did, he clearly believed in evolution. He had very definite views that there was no God, no religious beliefs whatsoever. But 3 years ago, just over 3 years ago, in the tsunami, he lost his granddaughter. They had gone to Thailand for the Christmas vacation period, and, you know, the tsunami hit on Boxing Day, the day after Christmas Day. And, I was amazed a few weeks later when they had a memorial service in London. He got up and read the lesson from the Bible, a book that he had been putting down all of his life. You see how somebody can change. And, you know, he changed as a result of what happened. I guess it made him think more about things. And, of course, he needed that hope that comes from religious beliefs. And, maybe Vanessa Redgrave will change too. I mean, it's certainly something that, you know, I'm happy to pray for, because it would be nice to think that she could change too. But, we all, at different points in our lives, you know, have to come to terms with different things. And those are times when often, you know, people do start thinking more deeply and change as a result of that. So why did Jesus Christ put our relationship with God above our relationships with each other? Matthew chapter 6 again and verse 33, remember those words, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. In Exodus chapter 20, we have the Ten Commandments, and in those first few verses of the Ten Commandments, God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You know, when you think about it, there's only one relationship which lasts all of your life, no matter what, and that is your relationship with God. You know, you can lose your wife or your husband, you can lose your children, you can lose everything. But you will not lose your relationship with God. And, that makes your relationship with God even more important than those other relationships. Now, you know, there's other reasons too. I mean, without God we would not be here. And we must have that spiritual focus. And if we don't have the right relationship with God, we're not going to have the right relationships with people anyway. So it really does come back to our relationship with God more than anything. And that does have to come first in our lives. Eventually, we will lose everything at the point of death. We can't take anything with us. But, of course, we can take that relationship with God with us. Because, at some point when Christ returns, the resurrection takes place. We have the opportunity for eternal life, and we continue that relationship that has started in this life. So God must come first in our lives. But if we live according to the two great commandments, we will find greater happiness than in anything else. I mean, if we're putting physical things first, we're always going to be frustrated. There's always going to be something missing in our lives. There's always going to be some degree of unhappiness. But when we learn to live by the two great commandments, then everything else gets into line. It gets into place behind the two great commandments, and we will find, as a result of that, that we're a lot happier.